Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids.
So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with David Robson, and he doesn't really need any introduction from me. You know, he's a traveling international yoga teacher. He's a friend of mine. You know, we've both been in Mysore together several times, and I've got to host him here at Ashtanga Yoga Columbus, and really grateful to have him on the show. It's like, you know, we're both sitting at home during the stay-at-home period during this, you know, pandemic, and we thought it would be a good idea to do a podcast. So, you know, David, I appreciate you being on the show today.
Well, you know, Taylor, there's nothing else to do. I'm just sitting around.
Seriously. Yeah. It's a perfect time. Actually, our schedule's lined up finally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're both in North America at the same time. And I've been wanting to do this. You asked me a while ago. And then, so I'm happy that it's worked out.
Yeah. I'm happy it worked out too. So I appreciate being on here. So let's talk a little bit about, I always like to start with people's like history, you know, like where they came from, and a little bit of like the story of who David was when he was in college. So or college, high school, you know, to give a little bit of perspective, you know, and part of the reason why I do this is because, you know, a lot of people kind of like look up to us or kind of, you know, look at the teachers and they're like, oh, wow, it's like this person's awesome and all that stuff. And it's, and we're real people though. You know, and you know, to give a little bit of the story, I think is really powerful because it makes us relatable to a certain extent. And so, tell me a little bit about like who were you when you were in high school?
I was one of those kids. When I went to high school, like we divided everybody into it was like the Breakfast Club, you know, like jocks and preppies and freaks. We called them freaks. I was a freak. So, you know, I was much more into my hair and sort of music than I was into academics. And
why were you a freak though?
Oh, we used to like dress up. I used to dress up like Robert Smith, you know, like that was, it was like Robert Smith inspired kind of look where me and like, there was a group of us, we would tease our hair and we would like wear makeup and stuff like that. And yeah, we were all in.
And what kind of music were you listening to?
I was like, I don't know. I don't know what we'd call it now. It was like back then we would call it gothic and industrial. I don't know if those labels still stand, you know, it was alternative music. Yeah. Gotcha.
I'm getting a better picture now.
Yeah. It was really funny, actually. So that was kind of me all through high school. Actually, I dropped out of high school. I stopped going to high school.
Did you ever get your degree?
I did, yeah. I ended up going straight to university, and I did kind of an equivalency in a year and went on to do university. So I fixed that.
Yeah. So why did you drop out? Like what was the reason for it?
I just wasn't having a good time in high school at all. I wasn't really fitting in. I was kind of torn between the academics and then social life. And I was originally like, you know, an enriched student. I was doing these special classes and I was happy with that, you know, but then they kicked me out because I couldn't, I wasn't showing up. And then I wasn't really happy with where I was put after that. And, I just didn't like it. And year after year, it didn't really get a lot better. I didn't have that experience when I was younger. I liked school, but then in high school, I didn't like it. So I ended up leaving and I lived in the suburbs too. So I was really eager just to kind of get on with my life and move out of the suburbs, move into the city. Yeah.
Gotcha. And you always lived in Toronto?
Yeah. Or I was just outside. Yeah. Yeah. And then I moved to the big city when I was 18.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And what did you study when you were at university?
I studied religion, comparative religion. So not theology, not a religion, but my specialty was psychology religion. I was really into psychoanalytic thought, you know, and then religious experience, like ecstasy and the ideas of transcendence and stuff like that. So I guess kind of already interested in some of the stuff I thought yoga would get me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how did you get started on the yoga path?
Well, I had a big gap between high school and university, and I was traveling and I was kind of going back and forth to Toronto. And I was, when I was in Toronto, I was doing odd jobs and playing music and things like that. And then I would go traveling for like a year at a time into Europe and Central America and South America. And when I would travel and at home too, I started getting into things like ritual magic, you know? And
wow.
Yeah. And, so I had an altar and I would sit in front of it and burn things and do all sorts of stuff like that.
How old were you when you were doing this?
I was in my 20s. And
okay.
Yeah, early 20s and stuff. And I was always interested in higher consciousness. So I was also doing a lot of psychedelics. And I guess I was also interested in escape. So I was doing all sorts of drugs. And part of that whole thing was I started to brush up against different ideas around yoga, you know, through the idea, I think especially the idea around enlightenment, things like that. That was kind of my entry point. Reading about it, I was always looking for these experiences that I thought would kind of transcend the normal world, you know, or normal experience or conditioned experience. And
were you looking for that because you felt like you were trying to escape your, you know, your reality, just like kind of how you did with the drugs or whatever?
Yeah, I think everybody I don't know, but I think everybody probably starts that way, whether or not that's how we see it. I think it's kind of advertised as an end to pain, right? It's like the escape from the wheel of suffering is this kind of enlightenment that suddenly you're free. And so I don't know if I would have thought that I was trying to escape that at that point, you know, I thought of it as something else. But I also have another theory. I think all of this, like I think even sort of yoga, the sort of the surge of it that happened in the 90s and stuff, is a lot of it has to do with Joseph Campbell and Star Wars. You know, I think a lot of us were exposed to that hero's journey and Yoda and the idea of the master and all of that when we were young. And it kind of set us up in some ways for later on in life.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of parallels in Star Wars and you know, those kind of movies where, you know, they're basically talking about, I mean, you know, the Force, you know, it's like you're talking about yoga, you know, or you're talking about empathy, or you're talking about, you know, like controlling your energy. So it makes a lot of sense for sure.
Yeah.
Because I grew up watching those things too.
You did, right? For sure. Hey, how old are you, Taylor? How old
are you? I'm 38.
Oh, you're a lot younger. And I'm 49. I'm almost 50, but yeah, okay. You still were like you saw Empire Strikes Back when you were young, and like those were formative movies, I think there's something to all of that kind of gave a lot of us the idea that the journey to be taken was inward, you know.
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure. And so when did you officially start your asana practice? Like when did you, and also was it Ashtanga, the first thing that you walked in on?
No, I was 27, I think, the first time I went to a yoga class, and I was in university at that point. I was kind of late going to university after I'd traveled for a while, and I decided to settle down and focus. And so while I was studying comparative religion, then somebody said, you know what, you would really like to come to this yoga class. You would really be into it. And I had been doing breathing exercises and meditation and things like that, always from books, usually when I was traveling, but, you know, and so I said, sure, I'll try it. And it was my first experience really going into a room where everybody was doing yoga. It was Shivananda style yoga.
Okay.
Which is
interesting.
Yeah, it's also a traditional practice. And there's a studio near the university here in Toronto. And I loved it. It was amazing. You know, I had that deep sense of release at the end of it that people get, you know, in Shavasana. And
sure.
Yeah, and then I was hooked, and it basically just started going like every day right away.
Wow, that's crazy. And you liked it on the first try? It wasn't painful like my experience?
I wasn't good at it or anything like that. It was painful, but I was kind of into it. I was open to that pain. Yeah.
You accepted this new suffering.
Yeah. I was fascinated by it too, you know, like I was fascinated by the people in the room that were good at it. I was fascinated by the whole structure of it, that there was a teacher, you know, and we were all listening to them, and there was altars there. I was fascinated by that. You know, it was, the whole thing was really, to me, it was just, it rang all these bells, and right away I was like, this, I'm going to do this. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you think that the teacher element of that first class, or that dynamic that was going on in the class, that, like, did you think it was important from the very first get-go?
Yeah, I think, well, I did the thing, I guess everybody does at first, and I assumed that person was already enlightened. Because, like, you know, why else would they be standing at the front of the room of the yoga class? But, you know, I kind of just completely trusted when I went in there. I went in to learn something, and I probably assumed that there was a lot more there than really was, you know, and like knowing sort of now a lot more about what it takes to stand in front of a room. But
right.
But I liked that idea. And I don't know, I remember back then there was some people at this center that were very like charismatic and really kind people, and they were great teachers, like really devoted, especially in that tradition, the Shivananda tradition. People like they'll spend their whole lives inside of that tradition, and they move from center to center. So you do get very experienced teachers who have, you know, spent their whole lives dedicated to the practice.
Sure.
Yeah. So I liked it. I remember, like, I don't know, it was like a couple months into it. I was doing headstand at the front of the room, and I fell. And when I fell like forward, like head over onto the altar. I like totally
had 7 years bad luck.
Yeah, I smashed the altar, like everything, and flowers tipped over, and you know, and the guy that was teaching just came over, and he just laughed. He was just smiling and laughing, and he helped me clean it up. And it was really very accepting, you know.
Yeah, that's really cool. I always joke with people at our shala, because we got an altar right, you know, at the front of the room, and I'm like, if you hit anything on there, it's 7 years bad luck.
Yeah, I think
it's like,
at it's least. Like,
so if you're doing pencha up there and you fall over, you're in trouble.
Yeah,
like it's going to be a rough pencha, rough ride.
Yeah, just to add to the pressure, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Increase the intensity. Why not? And so did you do that, like Shivananda style, did you do that like consistently for many years, or how did it morph into like this Ashtanga thing that you're doing?
Yeah, I did it for maybe like 2 years, And then I switched over to Bikram yoga. This was in the 90s in Toronto, so the late 90s, and things were just kind of opening up, you know. Yoga was kind of just sort of blossoming here. All these different styles were becoming available. And so this was the first Bikram place in Canada. And so people were telling me about it, and I was like, what? There was like mirrors and bright lights and really hot. The guy shouts at you. I was like, what? Because Shivananda is very super chill.
It's not like that at all.
Yeah, you take rest in between all the poses. And so I went to try it, and it kind of blew my mind. I was like, whoa, this is, and the physicality of it was so much fun. And at that point, I was starting to get more interested in the asanas, you know? Because I noticed with Shivananda, I had this tendency to kind of float away, you know, and it didn't really suit me that much. Like I'm already kind of like a little bit, what would the word be? Like I can daydream quite easily.
Okay.
So it wasn't helping me focus the way that I needed to. And then I found the Bikram was so like, it just really like dragged me into my body and made me stick there, and staring into the mirror and stuff was super powerful. And so I just started going, wow, I'm going to try this. So I started doing that like twice a day.
Twice a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You're blowing my mind right now.
I was doing it twice a day, and then I was still going to school, but it was a perfect, because I would go in the early in the morning, and then after classes I'd go, and I wasn't doing anything else, you know. I was leading a very sort of healthy life, and then the guy there, Sasha, this Russian guy, Sasha, he needed other teachers because this yoga was exploding. It was getting really popular, and there wasn't really very many teachers at that point. And he was he had high expectations. I don't know how to describe it, but one night he fired all his teachers, and so he needed teachers. So he trained me, and he taught me the dialogue, the Bikram dialogue, and I started teaching. That was my part-time job in university, teaching Bikram yoga. And I got like a whistle and a stopwatch.
A whistle and a stopwatch.
And I was teaching Bikram yoga. Yeah. And
then, oh man, we're learning so much about you right now.
Oh yeah,
this is awesome. Yeah,
yeah. It's all public domain. And it was fun. It was hilarious, and I was enjoying it a lot. But while I was doing that, I was still looking around at other styles of yoga and stuff, and I started to read about Ashtanga, and there was some classes. I was like doing drop-in classes. They were like lead classes. And there was some stuff online, you know, like people's blogs way back. And people were going to India back then and writing about it, like these long blogs. And they were going to study with Pattabhi Joyce back then. And then I found a Mysore program in Toronto. And I started doing that practice as well as doing the Bikram, and then I just kind of sort of switched over into Ashtanga yoga.
And why do you feel like it kind of pulled you in that direction? Like why, you know, it's like you tried these other styles, like what really kind of set it apart for you?
I think it was closer to like my Star Wars ideal, you know, like there was a Yoda. You know, like Bikram was, I guess, supposed to be the Yoda in Bikram yoga, but he wasn't a very good yoga. You could tell. And there was something about going to India that you could have access to the teachers there. I loved the self-practice format, the Mysore format. There was that kind of bhakti kind of tradition thing happening too. That was very exotic to me, you know. Now we'd call it, you know, parampara. Now we know we have a better word for it that we use. But I love that whole lineage thing. That it wasn't really as much a part like of Bikram. Bikram was much more Americanized and stuff.
Sure.
And so Ashtanga still had that. To me, there seemed something a bit more timeless about it and authentic, therefore authentic, you know, and also the difficulty. I was really in love with the difficulty of it, that there was these six series and it was so hard, and the expectation of 6 days a week. That was all drawing me in, super powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny too, because different personalities, like, you know, sometimes it draws people out.
For sure.
That thought. Yeah. But for me, I was like, okay. Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, 6 days a week. That's the only thing that makes sense. You know, especially after you start seeing the benefits of it. It's like, you know, so it's really powerful. But I mean, for some people it's turn off, and the other people it's like, you know, it's a good thing. It's really interesting to watch that, how it develops in people.
Yeah. I think it's probably like how much you want to change, you know? Like when you find something, it's like, okay, I've been looking for something and now I've found it, and I'm gonna commit all my energy to it because it's gonna bring the change that I'm looking for. But then when some people are coming to it, they're not thinking that they want to change that much, you know? So they're like,
right.
Well, that's too much commitment or too much change. I don't need all that. So, but I was totally open to it. I wanted to go all in just to see where I would go, you know, where it would take me.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. Yeah. Exact same thing. I was like, I don't want to be the person I was couple years ago. Like, I don't want to be that person anymore.
That totally
sucked me in.
Yeah.
I want to be someone new. I want to have a different outlook. I don't want to be depressed. I don't want to be anxious. I don't want to be these things anymore. It's like, but it was the only vehicle that I ever knew that, like, immediately I felt that change.
Like a life ring, right? You know, like, how can you not kind of grab onto it?
Right. Yeah. Especially, I mean, I like, you know, you've heard a lot of my story, but it's like, you know, it was a lifesaver. It's like, literally, like, someone threw it to me. I was like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I need. And not everyone has that kind of, you know, experience of what I've had, but still it's like, you know, a lot of us want change, or we're seeking something different. And it sounds like you were seeking stuff too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I was like kind of back then closer in a sense to that situation where I was unhappy with who I had thought I had been, you know, like, or the way my life had been going. And I wanted something radically different. I was willing to kind of do the work. I'd come to a point in my life where I was ready to commit my energy to do whatever I had to do. And I was just looking for, like you say, the vehicle, you know, the thing that would carry me there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. So when did you make your first trip to India, and like, how did that even come about?
Yeah. So I finished school and right away, so I finished in the summer, I think of, it was like 2002. And then in the fall of 2002, I went, or maybe it was in the fall of 2001, actually, that I went, like later in December. And, so I'd met Pattabhi Joyce earlier. I'm trying to remember now if it was 2002 or 2001. But in Montreal, him and Sharat were traveling around, and they came at Darby's invitation to Montreal. And so I traveled from Toronto to Montreal to go practice with them. And I'd already been reading all about them and everything, super excited about it. And then I did this lead class with Pattabhi Joyce in the mornings. We were doing lead primary series. And then Sharat was offering Mysore at Darby's studio in the afternoon. So then I would go do that in the afternoons for the week. And Sharat and I are the same age. So we were both, you know, in our just 30 or whatever. And he was so deep in his sadhana at that point and stuff when I met him that he was like shiny, you know, I just connected with him. Like, I felt an affinity and, a respect for admiration for his, I think for his proximity to Pattabhi Joyce and to the teaching and how many years he'd already been practicing and all of that stuff. And I told him I wanted to come to Mysore, and he's like, come. So then I booked a ticket, and I went that winter. I went in December to, first I went to Kovalam, and I studied for a month there with Lino Miele. And then I went to Mysore in January, and I studied with Shrat for like 5 months. And
wow, you stayed a whole 5 months?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
They were just opening the new shala to back then. They just moved from Lakshmipuram. The new shala wasn't quite open. And so everybody was studying with Shrat at Saraswati's house, you know, where her shala was up until recently.
Right.
And so they were there until the new shala opened. Then when the new shala opened, everybody switched over to the main shala. But I stayed there at Saraswati's house and studied with Shrat. Shrat kept teaching a group of students. When he was done assisting Patabi Joyce, he would teach his own students at 8 a.m., 8:30. So it was a bit later. And yeah, I did that the whole time that I was there. And there was like 10 of us or 8 sometimes or 12 sometimes, but it was never very many people. And wow. Yeah, it was super intimate and really, really great. You know, like lots of attention.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. And hot. It was so hot. I remember that. It just kept getting hotter.
Because of India or because of the house you were in?
Yeah, both. Like, yeah, it was, but because of India, I was just staying like later and later, you know, I guess I stayed into like May or something, and then it was just crazy hot. And it was a really super transformational trip. And I had sort of devoted everything I had to that trip, to going to India. And I'd finished school. I think I used some of like the last money I had. I had a credit card, I remember that. And I just said, I'm just going to go, and then I'll kind of figure it out later, you know? And so it was just very in the moment kind of thing, you know? It was like transformational.
Yeah. Why was it transformational? I mean, what changed for you?
I think I did something that I really wanted to do, you know, like, that feeling when you're somewhere and you're like, I'm exactly where I want to be, you know? It was just learning at the feet of a teacher and learning the thing that I was in love with learning, doing the practice, had the effects of the practice on me. I mean, I wasn't practicing at like a crazy level. I was doing like primary and a little bit of intermediate each day for all that time, you know? And Shrat was helping me into Marichasana D and Supta Karmasana and stuff back then. And, you know, it wasn't like I was going like crazy deep or whatever in that sense, but I was just super happy about it. And I felt very complete. Yeah.
And how much do you feel like you changed from that first time that you walked into Shivananda yoga to your first trip or those first 5 months in Mysore? Like how much of you was the same or how much changed during that period of time?
Well, the very first time I walked into the Shivananda, I think I was like kind of hurting, you know, and I was looking for something, for relief or whatever. And I think I'd already kind of changed a lot of that before I went to India, where I was already sort of feeling the effects of yoga and kind of committed my energy to more productive pastimes. And it was just like I had kind of committed myself to doing something that I loved without any kind of idea of gain. I wasn't thinking at that time, I'm going to be a yoga teacher. And I didn't think either, oh, I'm going to come back to India again or anything like that. I had no motivation except just to be there. And I think I'd always lived an impulsive life, and that had probably gotten me into a lot of problems and troubles. But this kind of impulsiveness was like productive and healthy and good. And I felt just uh, just very complete, like in line with my desires. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's awesome.
You know what I'm saying, though, right? So, it's when things line up, right? Totally. You've got that. You've had that experience.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you're, it seems like you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
I was, yeah.
You know, seems like there's alignment is like a word that I was thinking of when you were talking about that.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh yeah, everything is exactly where it's supposed to be. I'm actually on my path now.
And
where everything else was just a distraction, or it was taking me the wrong direction, or whatever it was. So yeah, I've totally had that experience.
Yeah. And I guess it has a lot to do with what you want, you know, like, cause that's going to determine what makes you feel like you got it. So that's all I wanted, you know. I'd like to say I just wanted to be a student. Yeah. It was a bit less complicated than it had been before and even than it is now, you know. It was maybe a bit of a simpler time.
Yeah. Do you feel like some of the stuff that you've gotten, not to take us off track, but do you feel like some of the stuff that you've gotten as a result of yoga has kind of taken you off of the path a little bit or taken you away from that?
Well, like teaching yoga, you mean? Or
it's like, you know, I'm just thinking like it's so easily, you know, it's like you get on this path and you love this thing, and then it obviously it becomes more complicated, like you mentioned, you know, because all of a sudden you start teaching, and then all of a sudden like there's a shala, and then all of a sudden there's students, and, you know, it becomes a heavy burden to bear.
Yeah, right. We always spoil those things, eh? Those things that are so good. For sure. I mean, it's gotten more complicated because then I guess there's more weight on it, you know, and then I was just a practitioner. I wasn't a teacher. I wasn't trying to help other people or get other people to practice as well. And that, you know, I wasn't putting as much weight on my own practice. Like now, sometimes I can feel the burden of my own practice. Like, I have to maintain my practice. I feel like to be able to ask other people to maintain their practice, you know?
100%.
Yeah.
I'm with you there. Yeah. It's like, and the burden of practice after travel with a bunch of students, like it, you know, it's a lot. And so I feel like sort of the same way where, you know, there was a time where it was very simple, very pure. There was no expectation with it. You know, it's like I was teaching, but it was kind of barely teaching, you know, it was like a hobby. And then all of a sudden, like, it's not a hobby anymore. And it's like this thing that we do. And it's like this energy that we're holding or the space that you're holding for people. And it just becomes a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And it's fine if you can kind of keep it under wraps and kind of keep it in control. But I feel like a lot of times, like, you know, people sort of, you know, all of a sudden it becomes too burdensome. You know, it's like even recently, like a lot, I feel like a lot of teachers are kind of quitting or saying like, hey, you know what? It's not worth it to me anymore.
Yeah.
It's too heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that. It's a responsibility, right? And you don't have that responsibility initially. You're not in that same position, and all your energy is just devoted to your own experience and your own exploration. And, you don't have to carry anybody or anything else with it. And you don't, like what I find myself doing now a lot of the time is, when I have an experience, there's another part of me that's always figuring out how to pass on that experience, you know, where I never used to do that. You know, I would just have that experience. It would be all mine and I would just be, I would be affected by it or whatever. But now that's never the end of it, you know? So yeah.
Yeah.
So it's definitely changed, but I wouldn't, totally. I wouldn't give it up, you know?
Me neither. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't give it up at all. So not even a little bit of it.
Exactly.
Because it means a lot to me too.
Yeah.
And so why'd you want to become a teacher?
I didn't. I when the guy offered me the job to teach Bikram yoga, I thought, I asked him, like, how much does it pay? You know, like, I was like, well, I need a job. And then it was, I forget, it was like $40 for the class or something, or $60. And I was like, yeah, that's great. For sure. I'm all over it.
For an hour long class, that's not so bad.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah. And back then too, actually the pay was higher back then. So I was into it. And then when he taught me how to teach, when he gave me this script, it wasn't really teaching. It was just, I was just repeating like this sort of written, they call it a dialogue, but it's a monologue. And I would just have to sort of say it at the right times. You know, I was so nervous, I remember, like the first times I did. But after I relaxed a bit, I enjoyed it so much. Like I loved being in the room and talking to everybody and having that relationship. And I just really enjoyed it. And it was a surprise to me. I'd never considered teaching or anything like that. I never thought about it in the slightest. Yeah. And yoga teacher was never a job that was presented to me in high school, you know, like,
yeah,
no one said, yeah, you could think about being a yoga teacher. And I wasn't thinking when this guy hired me that it was going to be a job either. I thought it was just something I would do until I found my job. I was wanting to be a psychoanalyst. I wanted to learn like a traditional psychoanalysis and then be a therapist. And that was totally where I was going. And then I just kind of got I fell in love with teaching.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And so when did you start teaching Ashtanga yoga?
I started doing like some drop-in classes, like, you know, here and there. I was subbing some classes in Toronto. I guess it was Ashtanga. It was kind of like, they were called Ashtanga classes. I don't know. I don't think I was really representing it very well. And I was doing Mysore at the studio that was kind of, it was like more, now I can see it was a vinyasa kind of based studio, but they had this thing called Mysore and they had things called lead primary series and stuff. So I started teaching those maybe after I got back from India that first time. But it wasn't very informed or very, you know, traditional even. For some reason, I was thinking like what I was doing in India was like in India, you know, what happens in India stays in India.
Yeah.
And then I would come back and kind of present a more watered down version of it to students, mainly because I was also being told by the studio owners that that's what people wanted. You know, nobody wanted that sort of traditional approach, and it was too much and it was inaccessible and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's what I was told in the beginning too. But I mean, my experience now, it's funny because, you know, it's sort of like the more traditional that I've become, the more people show up, you know, it's like people want that. They want the information. They want, you know, instead of like, you know, easing off of everything, it's like, you know, sort of the more that you're drawn to, like, this is how we teach in India, like, you know, people respect it, you know, but in the beginning it was like, oh yeah, we don't teach like that. It's like, we're a non-traditional studio. Cause I was at a vinyasa studio as well.
Yeah. I think, oh yeah, actually I knew that. Yeah. I think it's maybe a common experience. There's some kind of, antipathy between them, but I had the same sort of, I guess, experience after a while that the more traditional that I taught, then I was making better connections. And I kept going to India too all the time. So after I guess 5 trips and when I got authorized and stuff, and I realized, you know, like I don't really want to teach anything except what I believe in. And I just believe in this. Like, I know this works because that's why I do it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it worked. So it seems ingenuine to teach somebody something that I don't do, you know? So I'm just going to teach them this. And then I remember as soon as I started teaching sort of traditionally, everybody fired me They called the studios for like, get out. And so I was forced to do my own program.
And I feel like that's a common experience as well.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
As the Shtanga people, we all have like these common experiences. You get, it's like you teach at a vinyasa studio, they tell you not to teach it the right way. And then all of a sudden, like you start teaching more traditional, and they're like, go hit the highway, like get out of here. You know, it's like, it's all the common experience. And then you're like, all right, fine, I'll start my own. So,
yeah. It's like your last resort, right? Is that, okay, finally, I'll start my own. Yeah. I've actually gotten fired from Bikram for assisting people.
Wow.
Yeah, and so it was, I guess, yeah, I just kept kind of getting chucked out of studios until I had to open up my own.
Yeah. Yeah, and how did that come about?
Well, I was partnered in this vinyasa sort of / Ashtanga studio, and then it kind of ended abruptly. They locked me out. So I started my own program, and it grew really quickly. It got very popular because people wanted the tradition. And so I think I started at a different studio, you know, kind of like renting space at it. And then after about 6 or 7 months, we opened up our own space. And it's been, we just actually closed the doors on that old space this year, 12 years later. And we're in the midst of building our new space. We got evicted. Actually, a vinyasa studio bought our building and evicted us from our studio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is kind of funny.
I feel like that happened to someone else. I can't remember who it was, but I feel like someone else got booted out by like a commercial vinyasa studio.
I know Eddie.
And it's like, oh,
Eddie's studio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it was I think the landlord's found a vinyasa place that would pay more, but these guys, as far as I can tell, actually bought the building, seeing that there was a studio built there, and then evicted us. Anyway, I know now that these things, when they happen, are often actually precursors to the change you need. Because even when I got fired from those vinyasa studios, it felt like a terrible thing to me at the time, right? But it ended up being exactly what I needed to grow. And so that's definitely happening now. And I mean, this morning, Yellen and I taught lead primary online, and we had 600 people registered, and we had over 400 with us online. It was crazy. So
that is crazy.
So I feel like the message that we're giving out is good, and it's growing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really awesome. And so when do you move into your next space?
Well, we're building it right now. So it could be ready in a month if we could start building it. But COVID has kind of shut down the construction site at the moment.
Canada, the construction workers are basically non-essential?
That's right. Unless they're building healthcare or transportation, then it's non-essential.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're allowed to do all the construction that we want here.
Hmm.
So it's very interesting that, you know, it's like construction workers are allowed to be out, but we're not allowed out of our house.
Yeah.
You know, we're stuck in here. So, and it's hard because there's three kids that all they want to do is go do something.
Well, you guys got to go start building something then.
Start a construction company.
Yeah, you can get out.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like pretty soon you'll be in a completely new space.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really a level up. It's going to be a beautiful space, and it's ground floor, and it's like a little bit nerve wracking. You know, it's really out there, big windows. And I think we're going to just bring traditional practice to so many more people. Because we were kind of hidden away where we were before. It was an upstairs spot, and now we're really just right out there. So I'm super excited about it, and I know it's where we need to go. But I never would have done it unless I've been evicted.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I would stay in my space forever unless I would get evicted. Same as you. I like the same all the time. I don't really like change that much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, it takes so much energy.
Yeah, I know. It's like you never want to do it either. Yeah. So I'll sit here and twiddle my thumbs. It's like same space, same energy, all of that stuff. But, you know, sometimes these major changes are the best things for us, for sure.
Yeah. I even feel like the online stuff that's been happening now with COVID and quarantine has been like a necessary growth for me, just to get more comfortable with the idea of teaching online and meeting more people, reaching more people that way and stuff. Like I was kind of half-assed doing it, but I was never really doing it. And so now I've been forced into it, and I'm happy with it. Actually, I've been doing a course this for a couple of weeks now, and I feel very connected with the people that are taking it. And it's actually like a really great way to teach some things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been really surprised with it as well. And it's been amazing to see, you know, students like continue to grow and also have like that bird's eye view of watching them, you know, in their own house, which is like sort of more intimate for some reason.
Yeah.
Although Mysore is intimate, you know, it's like there's a certain thing about they're letting you view their life, really, like where they practice or where they might practice and what their house looks like. And I feel connected to them too. It's weird. You know, I never thought in a million years that I would kind of teach like Mysore online. I mean, at least that's what we're calling it.
Yeah.
But it's been amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten anywhere from like 30 to 90 people, you know, and, you know, and led classes or, you know, Mysore classes and stuff like that. It's been unbelievable. And so I'm the same, you know, I never really did, you know, like the platforms or any of that stuff. Like, you know, I would do a tutorial video on Instagram, but it seems like, you know, this is a completely different, you know, animal. And I do feel connected with it just like you, which has been a very interesting experience.
Yeah. Maybe it'll mean like less travel in the future. That I wouldn't mind that. Like a little bit less airplanes. The airplanes aren't great.
No, they're not great for your practice either.
No,
and sleeping.
They're not.
They're terrible. So, but so why do you continue? You know, it's like I always like to ask the guests this. Like, why do you continue to practice? You know, like, why do you continue to get on your mat 6 days a week? You know, like, why do you, what does the practice do for you that like compels you to, you know, have this disciplined lifestyle that we live?
Well, there's something very natural about it at this point, right? It's been 20 years, basically, almost 20, you know, like, so there's something that's become so habitual about it that I can't imagine not doing it in one way, even though I would say it's actually much harder now than it was 20 years ago. I keep doing it because I want to know, I want to keep exploring. I love what it gives me. And, I feel incomplete, without that now, without that time when I'm looking inward, that feeling in my body, when I'm inhabiting my body fully. You know, I feel like I'm on a path, you know, like I want to take a step along that path each day. I feel sad if I don't get to take a step along it. I don't think I'm getting anywhere in the sense of I'm not going to get to the end of the path, but there's something about taking that step each day that makes me feel like a whole. Yeah, if I don't take that step now, I feel incomplete. And I know, I mean, that's an attachment or whatever, but I believe with all of my heart that it's a helpful attachment, you know, that it's helped me. And I know that through helping me, I've been able to help other people. So one of the things, like we were saying way back too, is that now the practice at this point, our own practice, is part of what helps us help other people. And I think the best thing that I've gotten through doing yoga is that I've found a way to be helpful.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've found a way to be helpful too.
Yeah.
It's a really amazing experience. I'm grateful for my life today. And it sounds like you are too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Well, David, I want to thank you for being on the show, you know, and kind of sharing, you know, your life and giving us sort of an intimate, I learned more about you right now than all of the other times that we hung out. Yeah. Like, so it's really awesome to, you know, kind of get to know you on a deeper level. And, you know, I can definitely relate to so much of what you said. It's like, you know, our teaching and our communities, like, you know, really parallel one another, really nice. And so
I've always felt really that. Cool. Yeah. We're both the traditionalists. Yeah. You know, but absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm honored to be on the show, Taylor. Thanks for asking me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you being on, and stay safe during this difficult period of time. And, you know, make sure that you hang out with kids as much as you can.
I don't have a choice. And,
yeah, me neither. You know,
yeah.
So, but thank you for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Taylor.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.